I'll turn your attention to Matthew chapter 6 as we continue with the Sermon on the Mount. We're going to talk about something tonight that really we very rarely hear any type of sermons about. And in fact, as I started looking, I kind of went through some of my preachers that I go through that usually have things posted. Good luck finding a lot of sermons on the topic of fasting. For whatever reason, it's just not discussed very much. I know we've got Brother George Battens. I also found a sermon from Don Pruitt that was in one of the preacher's studies notes. So I put that on the website. So if you want to see some more material about the concept of fasting, we'll at least have a little bit. But for whatever reason, fasting is something that has really been neglected and overlooked, in my opinion at least, in the Lord's church. It's something that we don't talk about. We talk about fasting from a medical standpoint, that we may have to do a fasting diet before we get blood for a blood test or something like that. But fasting is something that was really spoken of a lot in the New Testament. And for whatever reason, it seems to be something that we've just kind of glossed over. I mentioned this morning, do you realize that there's twice as many references in the New Testament to fasting as there is to the Lord's Supper? And so I can't imagine any Bible-believing Christian to just kind of ignore the Lord's Supper. But then we have something that's got twice as many references in the New Testament, but it's something for whatever reason that we don't talk very much about. But we're going to talk about it tonight. So this may not be the most popular lesson of all time, but it's something that I think we need to hear. From Matthew chapter 6, the Sermon on the Mount. So Jesus has just wrapped up the model prayer. He's taught people how to pray, and he says you got to be careful of certain things. You know, be careful, do what you're supposed to do. He's talked about the differences of the hypocrites, and he's talked about the devout man. He's talked about murder and adultery and all these things. And now we get to verse 16 of chapter 6. Jesus says, "Moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance. For they disfigure their faces that they may appear to men to be fasting. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But you, when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, so that you do not appear to men to be fasting, but to your Father who is in the secret place. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly." So we're going to talk about the definition of fasting. We're going to look at some examples of fasting throughout the Bible. And then we'll get to the question that probably already on your mind. Are we expected to fast today as Christians in the Lord's church? Is that something that the Lord expects us to do? And I'll do my best to answer those questions. Before we go further, let's take opportunity to go to God. Let's begin our study this evening. Let's try to keep in mind the purpose of the Sermon on the Mount. And so the first chapter, the first kind of the part, not necessarily a chapter, but the first part of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is speaking with a lot of moral issues. And he is talking about a comparison between the old law and this new law of Christianity. And then we get into the second part of the Sermon on the Mount. And really, it's about the righteousness that is expected out of Christians. It's the righteousness of the Christians was far expected to exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. And in Matthew 5 and 20, that's exactly what the Lord says. "For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven." And so as Jesus now kind of changes gears a little bit in his teaching, by the time we get to chapter 6, that's really what the discussion is about. The righteousness of these hypocritical Pharisees being placed alongside that of the devout Christian. And he's going to talk about three very specific instances, as well as the means by which to pray. And that's what we have been studying recently. He's going to talk about giving and how a Christian should give as opposed to how the Pharisees were. Then he discussed praying. And so talking about how they like to get on the street corners in long flowing robes and let everybody see them. And so there was the question of the motive of these Pharisees as opposed to the motive of the Christian. And he said, listen, you just need to go pray in a closet, pray in secret. Not necessarily as a command, but just to juxtaposition of comparison, comparing a Christian to these Pharisees. Pharisees, he wanted everybody to look at him. And so then he takes a little bit of a segue, and he teaches what we have titled the model prayer, what the Lord calls, what the world calls the Lord's Prayer. And so now he's going to jump right back into this idea of the righteousness of the Pharisees, and he wants to talk about the topic of fasting. So that's when he says, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites. Fasting in the Bible is found throughout. There's over 60 unique references to fasting in the Bible. About 20 of these are references in the New Testament. So I said again, what I said earlier, there's more references to fasting in the New Testament than there is to the observance of the Lord's Supper. So it is something that was very important to the early church. So you might ask, well, who fasted? Well, I give you who's list of people. Moses, David, Nehemiah, Samuel, Elijah, Hannah, Esther, Daniel. All of these were known to have fasted during their lives, specifically says. That's the Old Testament. New Testament, and Cornelius, John the Baptist, Paul, Barnabas, Luke, Jesus, and just referenced as John's disciples. And there's probably more. I did not pick all. It's not an inclusive list. But this is a who's list of people who were known to have fasted. Something that is very important. So what is fasting? Well, fasting, if you go back to the Strong's, it just literally means to abstain from food. And so when we talk about a fast in a religious sense, it was an intentional abstinence of food, but we have to say for religious reasons. That's a typo there. For religious reasons is what a fasting would be. Now, I know once a year I go to the doctor and I have to do the blood test, and I have to do a fasting blood test, which means I can't eat anything after 7 o'clock in the evening the night before and drink water. That is a fast. I don't even like that, to be honest with you, because about 10 o'clock I want some ice cream and I can't do it. Paul said he fasts all the time. He likes to have a big meal at lunchtime, and sometimes he'll fast that evening if he's eaten enough at lunch. That's not the same concept. That's not the same idea of what a fast is. A fast is the idea of doing something for a religious reason. To consciously and intentionally withhold food from yourself for a religious reason. Now, there's a couple different types of fasting that the scriptures talk about. Some people will even say there's three. I'll tell you the third in a minute. But number one is an absolute fast. That means nothing allowed. No food, no water, nothing. Do not take anything. There's a couple examples of this. Moses, and I don't believe I would encourage this, but I think he had a little bit different situation being up there with God. But it said for 40 days and 40 nights, he did not eat nor drink. That's not what I believe we're called upon to do. Esther, remember the story of Esther? Now we have the story, who knows whether you've come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Keep reading the next verse. Because what Esther does before she goes in to see the king, she goes on a feast, and she says, get everybody to go on a fast for 3 days, no food and no water. So that was Esther. Saul of Tarsus, remember how Saul of Tarsus was blinded there upon the road to Damascus for 3 days and three nights. Saul of Tarsus did not eat. He fasted as he was taken into the city before he was told what to do. So those are some examples of an absolute fast. No food, no water, nothing taken in. Now, a normal fast, what most folks would call normal, you wouldn't be allowed water. You could have water, but just no food. Some people talk about a third type. They call it a limited feast. I don't buy too much into the limited. And they'll normally reference Daniel. You remember how Daniel and the three buddies, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were taken into Babylon? And they didn't want to eat the meat. They didn't want to eat what Babylon was preparing for them because I don't know if it was unclean or whatever reason. They said, we don't want to eat it. And they said, here, give us a couple weeks and we'll eat what we want to eat and then come back and check. And they were bigger and stronger and faster than the Babylonians who were eating the Babylonian food. And some people say, well, see, that's a limited fast. I don't know that I would call it that. I would just call that maybe a little bit more selective diet. I don't know that I would consider that a fast. But the Bible talks about fasting throughout, and it's normal fasting. That is what is typically meant when it is said that someone is fasting. Fasting is nearly always tied with prayer. And so you will read those two things tied together. We had much prayer and fasting. Through much prayer and fasting, you'll see those two words tied together. George Batty says you can have fasting. Or I'm going to say how he says it. There's a way you can pray without fasting. He says, but you can't fast without prayer. This is the way that George Batty says it. The book of Nehemiah also talks about a fast, and it gives a little bit more specific things. It ties fasting with confession of sin, with the reading of the law, and with worshiping God. So a fast is not something you just to do it. There is a reason. There's always some type of important event, and it's a time to draw closer to God. It's a time to draw closer through prayer, confession of sins, reading the law, worship. So here's our first question. How many days of fasting were required by the law of Moses? And the answer is one. That's it. There was one day that the children of the nation of Israel were required to fast. And that was on the Day of Atonement. That was the only time. Remember, we had seven feasts of the Lord. That was the only time that they were ever required to fast. Leviticus chapter 23, verse 27, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, also the tenth day of the seventh month shall be the Day of Atonement. It shall be a holy convocation for you. You shall afflict your souls. That's what that phrase means. The idea of afflicting their souls, that meant they were going to do something to themselves. That is the fast. They were going to afflict their souls. But look how important it is. Look down to verse 29. On the Day of Atonement, it says, for any person who is not afflicted in soul on that same day shall be cut off from his people. So on the Day of Atonement, if we were supposed to fast, and we ran down and got a candy bar, it says we are to be cut off from the people. That's how important of a concept it was, to be afflicted in their souls. So one day a year, the Jews were required, or the nation of Israel was required to fast. In Acts, the 27th chapter, verse 9, it even makes mention of this. It says, now when much time had been spent, and sailing was now dangerous because the fast was already over. Now that didn't mean much to us. But in a nautical sense, it did. The sailors knew what time of the year they needed to get on the ocean, or on the sea, rather, to avoid these bad storms. And it says, because the fast was already over. So what is the fast? Well, by New Testament times, it was common to refer to the Day of Atonement as simply the fast. That's what it meant, because that was the only day that the entire nation was required to fast. So what was the purpose? What was the purpose of having this fast? Well, when a person fasted, or remember the term, afflicted their souls, they were left to think about their dependence upon God. Now, I've heard my Uncle John say this a couple of times, and we always just kind of laugh at it because we think he's a conspiracy theorist, but he says, we're about a week away from pandemonium in the streets. We live in a time, we are a week away. All you got to do is shut down the grocery stores. Within a week, people be shooting and killing each other trying to get food. Because when the grocery stores are shut down and you got to come up with your own food, then that changes everything. And so I think about the lesson this morning. Give us this day our daily bread. That really comes, that hits home. That we are to pray for sustenance for the day. And that's it. And so I think that's the idea of fasting goes right along with what Jesus was teaching earlier in the Sermon on the Mount about the daily bread. We pray for daily bread. We have the daily bread provided for us, but yet we're supposed to make a conscious decision to not partake of that daily bread. That's what fasting is. That's a pretty powerful and important thought. You know, David talked about fasting too, Psalm 35 and 13. But as for me, when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth, I humbled myself with fasting. You want to fast? You're going to be humble. Because you're going to realize how much God takes care of us. We have to be humble. 1 Corinthians 9 and 27, the Apostle Paul said it like this, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection. And I always like the imagery he's using that part. Remember, he's talking kind of like shadow boxing. He's talking about I'm fighting against the air. And so it gives the image of an athlete who has to discipline their body and bring that body into subjection. And so sometimes that means saying no to the physical desires that you might have. Maybe that's what Paul is saying. By saying no to his physical desires, Paul can discipline both his body and his mind. And I think that's what a fast does. It allows you to refocus yourself. So, the people fast? Absolutely. Was fasting always private? Remember, what did Jesus say? He said, don't be like the hypocrites who go around and dishevel their face and disfigure themselves so that everybody knows that they're fasting. So does that mean that fasting is always private? Should anyone know that we're fasting? And the answer is no. Sometimes fasting was public. You realize that? Sometimes an entire congregation would join in a fast. And so people would know if you were fasting. At least the congregation itself would know. When a big decision had to be made by a local congregation, oftentimes they would fast. Let me give you an example. Acts 14 and 23. So when they had appointed elders in every church, Lystra, Iconium, and Antioch is who he's talking about, and prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord in whom they had believed. So sometimes congregations would fast when decisions had to be made. I got to thinking, is that something that we ever talked about here in 21st century United States? When a congregation has to make a decision, but do we want to bring in a preacher to work with us? Who do we want to have for the meeting this summer? Have you ever heard of a congregation calling a congregational fast to make a big decision? I'll be honest, I don't think that I have. I'll be even more honest, I can't remember a sermon ever being given here about the importance of fasting. Now, I'm sure there probably has been, but it's just something that I cannot recall off the top of my head. It's just something that for whatever reason has just seemed to have been glossed over. Why? It's throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament. Let me ask you this. How long should a fast last? A day? An hour? A month? How long should a fast last? Well, I can't seem to find any structure. This is what a fast is and this is how long it is. But it seems to be, typically, it lasts anywhere from 1 to 3 days. So I already mentioned Saul of Tarsus. He went on a 3-day fast. I mentioned Esther. She had a 3-day fast. Normally, I'm assuming that it was a 1-day fast. But there's Acts 9 and 9. There's Saul of Tarsus. They led him by the hand, brought him into Damascus, and he was 3 days without sight, and neither ate nor drank. Now, I do know you can survive a whole lot longer without food than you can survive without water. And so when I'm reading about Jesus fasting for 40 days and 40 nights, and I'm reading about Moses for 40 days and 40 nights, you know, I think there's a little bit more to that. That's some, you know, that's God taking care of those in certain important situations. You know, but not having a meal, you know, it's not going to kill us. You might think it would. But, you know, fasting for a day is not going to kill us. You know, I've even heard it said to me, maybe you've heard the same thing, it wouldn't hurt you to skip a meal. You may have heard that before. It's not going to kill us for a day. But let me tell you what fasting should not be. Fasting should not be an opportunity to be seen of men. And that's really what Jesus is discussing, the motive behind fasting. And that's what he's trying to get into. So I just stole this from my last lesson because I was talking about the motives behind prayer. And it's the same concept. Remember the word hypocrite? He says, don't be like the hypocrites. A hypocrite, that word means an actor. It means an actor on stage, trying to get attention, a pretender. So just like we shouldn't be an actor trying to get attention on prayer, fasting's the same way. We should be putting on a show for the audience. And that's what the Pharisees were doing. They would make themselves look hideous. And they would, you know, dirty up their face, mess up their hair. They would do whatever they could to try to make themselves look pathetic. So then everybody would say, oh, look at that man. He's fasting. What a righteous man that must be. That's what Jesus is teaching against. Over the centuries, the Pharisees had imposed several days of fasting. Remember, how many were they commanded to fast? One. Just keep that in mind. They were commanded to fast one. But additional days have been added. So we already have the Day of Atonement. That's one day. Then they added the fifth and the seventh month. And it appears that there was to be one day of each of those months that were held as a national day of fasting. If I can remember correctly, the fifth month was to commemorate the falling of the temple in the year 586 BC. The seventh month was to commemorate the death of the last king back in the times of Gedaliah and Jehoiachin, Jehoiakim. It was one of those. Once he died, there was a fast set apart for those people. The Bible even mentions that in Zechariah chapter 7. Not by name, but it says it in reference to these fasts. Then the word of the Lord of hosts came to me, saying, "Say to all the people of the land, to the priest, when you fasted and mourned in the fifth and seventh months during those 70 years, did you really fast for me?" And so it's kind of asking a rhetorical question about a fast, whatever the reason was. And were you really fasting for the right reasons? Were you really fasting for me? That's what God's saying. Were you really fasting with the right motive? But it does mention here about the fifth and the seventh month. So that was a day of fasting that the Pharisees had added after the fall of Jerusalem in 586 B.C. But what was God really asking? He did not accept their fasting because it was not of a pure motive. Very similar to what we get in Isaiah. In Isaiah, the word of God comes to Isaiah and he says, "I am sick and tired of your futile sacrifices. I don't want them anymore. I don't want your incense. I don't want your sacrifices," because they were not doing it for the right reasons. Well, the fast was the same way. They were not fasting for the right reason. So we've got the Day of Atonement. Now we've got this fifth and the seventh month. Well, they'd also added in Rosh Hashanah. That's the New Year. That is the Jewish New Year is what we would call it. It's also known as the Day of Trumpets as the Feast of the Lord's Day. They decided that we'll add a fast on the Day of Trumpets. And then number five, they also decided we're going to fast every Monday and every Thursday. And apparently what that's in reference to is Moses going up to Mount Sinai. And so tradition held it that he went up the mountain on a Monday and he came down the mountain on a Thursday with the Ten Commandments on the stones. And I don't find the days ever mentioned, but that's what the Jews had decided. That's what the Pharisees had decided from their tradition and from their legend. And so now, every Monday and every Thursday, twice a week, became a fast. And they really enjoyed the concept of fasting. You ever heard that before? Should have. Luke chapter 18, verses 10 through 12. Remember the parable that Jesus gave of the two men who were praying? And one of them was this Pharisee, and one was a tax collector, a publican. Remember what happened? The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, "God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as that fellow over there, that tax collector. I fast twice a week." That's what he's talking about. He would fast Monday and Thursday because he was a righteous Pharisee and he wanted everyone to know that. And so that's what the Pharisees were doing. They were really putting that as kind of a calling card. Look how righteous I am. Look how good I fast twice a week. And then you got this publican over here. Remember what his prayer was? "Lord, forgive me for I'm a sinner." That's all he had to say. And so Jesus said, which one's more justified? Which one is justified more in their righteousness? The guy who's fasting twice a week and making sure that everybody in town knows it? Or the man who humbled himself, wouldn't even look up his eyes and said, "Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner." And obviously it was the publican that the Lord is more impressed with. The Pharisees wanted everyone to know just how righteous they were. In fact, they observed over 108 days of fasting every year. It's a lot of fasting. I don't think that's what God expects. To make matters worse, the Pharisees would walk around in a disheveled state. They wanted everybody in town to know how righteous they were and that they were fasting. Jesus says again, "For they disfigure their faces, that they may appear to men to be fasting." I don't really know what it means to disfigure your face. I'm thinking that, I'm going back to the idea that the hypocrite was a stage actor. I mean, I can see them almost, you know, putting some makeup on, making their eyes look sullen, and, you know, dirt all over, you know, put in the right spot just to make themselves look pathetic. They were trying to make themselves look like they were in a horrible situation. Oh, and how proud we must be of them for being able to go through this 108 times a year. They wanted everyone to know that they were fasting. So remember the purpose of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus is teaching that the Christian should exceed the righteousness of the Pharisee. So, I want you to notice something. He is not teaching us to exceed the number of days that the Pharisees fasted, but rather their righteousness. We're talking about motive, which has been kind of the word that has keep popping up nearly every lesson that we've had on the Sermon on the Mount. Somewhere in it, we talk about it's the motive. It's why you do it, not necessarily what you do, but why you are doing it. And here we go again. It's about the motive. Because it'd be real easy to say, well, if the Pharisees are going to feast 108 times and I'm supposed to exceed that, then I'll fast for 109 days. That's not what the Lord is saying. So the question becomes, should we fast today? George Batty says it like this. Now we had three things that Jesus talked about. Prayer, giving, and fast. He says, can you imagine a Christian who never prays? No. I can't imagine a good Christian that never prays. Can you imagine a Christian who never gives or gives a little bit? And George Batty says, well, sort of. I can't imagine a Christian who may not have the deepest pockets. Can you imagine a Christian who never fasts? Yeah, that's pretty easy. That's pretty simple and pretty easy to think about Christians that have never fasted. Myself included. I mean, that's pretty easy to think of that have gone their entire Christian life but have never fasted. We would never consider that in prayer or the giving of our means. But fast? Yeah, that's Jewish. Fasting, that's a Jewish thing. Is it? Is fasting just a Jewish thing? Remember, there's twice as many references to fasting as there is to the Lord's Supper. Could you imagine a good old Church of Christ person who wouldn't stand up for the Lord's Supper? Well, what about fasting? And so now we start to look at it, maybe we realize that fasting is something that's pretty important. And it's something that as Christians, yeah, we probably need to fast. I don't know that we need to fast 108 times a year. I don't think we need to do it where everybody sees us, but I think there is a time that prayer and fasting is important because it brings us closer to God and it gives us an opportunity to humble ourselves when we realize what God has done for us. Let me give you an example from this. Oh, I've got to throw this in here. Do you realize, and Dad said this morning too, do you realize how carefully the words were chosen in the Sermon on the Mount? And just the prayer itself, how every word just has so much meaning. I think Jesus chose these three topics. And he could have chose three better ones. Prayer, giving, and fasting. Those are his three examples. And how much power there is in them. I want you to think about these words here. Consider the words if and when. Have you ever noticed that those words can be exchanged quite easily? If there is what's called, this is a legal term, a reasonable expectation. If you have a reasonable expectation of something happening, do you realize the words if and when can be replaced? For example, if Megan says, hey, if you go to Walmart, pick up some dog food. Is there a reasonable expectation that I'm going to go to Walmart? Yeah, probably I go about 10 times a week. So there's a pretty reasonable expectation that I will be at Walmart. If you go to Barcelona, you got to go see the cathedral. Is there a reasonable expectation that I'm going to go to Barcelona? Probably not. Number one, I'm cheap, and I can't imagine how much it costs to fly to Barcelona, Spain. I'm certainly not getting on a boat. So I don't think there's a real reasonable expectation. But when there is a reasonable expectation, and Megan says, hey, if you go to Walmart, do you realize you might as well just say, hey, when you go to Walmart? When you go to Walmart, pick up some dog food. And so when there's a reasonable expectation for something to happen, the words if and when can be very interchangeable. And sometimes I think the authors here, the translators, had a problem trying to figure out those words. When you come together. That's another one in the Bible. When you come together. Should it be if you come together? No, it's when. Because there's a reasonable expectation that as Christians we're going to assemble. When you come together. So what did Jesus say? Moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites. Do you think Jesus had a reasonable expectations for Christians to fast? Or is he saying, if you fast? No, I think it's when. I think it's when. I think there appears to be a reasonable expectation for Christians to fast today. It's something that's not spoken of very often in the Lord's church. But I tell you what, I think it's something that should be. I think it's something that should be studied. So I want you to go back and I want you to look at George Batty's lesson on the website. I want you to go back and pull up Don Pruitt's that I put on there. I want you to read through it. Don's is more of a narrative almost instead of an outline. Read through it and let's try to study this a little bit important. But don't forget, just as important as the fact that Christians should fast is the motive behind the fast. Why are we fasting? So why is it that fasting has been kind of glossed over in the New Testament? And I don't have a good answer for that. I really don't know. I don't know why folks have just kind of ignored it. Sure, this seems important, the descriptions. One reason might come from Matthew, the 9th chapter. Matthew, the 9th chapter, verse 14. Says that the disciples of John came up to him, or Jesus, saying, why do we and the Pharisees fast often, but your disciples do not fast? And I wonder if maybe that's one reason why. That fasting is not seen as a Christian activity. It's seen as something that the Pharisees, it's a Jewish thing. It's what the disciples of John did, not so much the Christians. Because really, the answer that Jesus gives is kind of strange. It's hard for me to follow. But Jesus said to them, can the friends of the bridegroom mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? But the days will come when the bridegroom will be taken away from them, and then they will fast. So he's saying while he was on the earth, the Christians did not fast. His group did not fast. But he says there's coming a time when the bridegroom's going to be taken. And he says, and then they will fast. So is it something that we need to do today? I don't see any reason why not. It seems like it's something that as Christians, the Lord expects us to fast. So let's conclude our lesson this evening. Fasting, prayer, and giving were the three specific examples that Jesus used to compare these hypocritical Pharisees to the devout righteous man. Those three. Never heard anybody say, well, we don't need to pray anymore. I've never heard anyone say, well, we don't need to give of our means anymore. We quote 1 Corinthians 16:1. I've never heard anybody say we shouldn't give of our means. So what about this concept of fasting? Why has fasting gotten different treatment than these other two examples? I can't give you a good answer for that. I want you to remember that motive is more important than the act itself. Just because we do something, if we're not doing it for the right reason, that's not what the Lord wants. Number three, I cannot find any biblical reason why we should not fast today. I can't find anything that says that fasting was an Old Testament requirement, that fasting is something that only Jews should do. Seems to me it's something that all Christians are expected to fast. Therefore, the purpose of fasting is to make us realize our dependency upon God. Remember what King David said? He said he was humbled through fasting. And finally, biblical examples usually lasted anywhere from 1 to 3 days. And don't forget this last part. Sometimes they involve entire congregations. It was not always something that was just personal. Sometimes it involved the entire congregation when important decisions needed to be made. So I told you at the beginning, probably not the most popular lesson because it's something that we haven't really talked much about. But it's very important that we study this idea of fasting because I think it's something that is important. Obviously, it's important to God or it wouldn't be in His Word. So I'll leave the lesson with you this evening.